Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests. Ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deb Wolf, your host, and today we have something special. We're going to go a little bit birdie today. We've got with us Dr. Lori Hess. Welcome to the show, Doctor.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I know that you have a website, the Vet Center for Birds and Exotics, so today we have a question that we thought would be, well, there's no way I can answer it. I'm a dog and cat trainer. And this is definitely a bird question, so I hope you can help us today.
Sure, I'm happy to try.
Okay, so we have a listener, David Johnson, and he says, okay, this is I'll just read it to you. My 17-plus-year-old cockatiel took a fit in his carrier on the way to have his nails clipped. He now exhibits symptoms of cerebral apoplexy, or maybe a stroke. The closest avian vet is 2 hours away and would be financially prohibitive. We are giving him vitamin fortified water from a dropper and have him on a clean towel in the bottom of his cage with the cover on. Is there anything else we can do for him? He has improved overnight and is now able to stand. Sounds
well,
terrible.
Well, that sounds a lot like some of the patients that I see in my animal hospital. Certainly any kind of neurologic kind of episode like that could be attributable to a seizure. It could be a stroke. I mean, the birds get both of those things. But one of the things that we commonly see in older birds, particularly if they've been eating a seed diet, which is really high in fat, is that they get atherosclerosis, or hardening of their arteries, with cholesterol and triglycerides and all the fat things that we worry about. And that can narrow the blood flow in the arteries so that when they get stressed and they really need to pump blood to their brains quickly and they get stressed, they don't get enough oxygen and they can sort of faint or it looks like they're passing out. So that's another thing we worry about. And we treat seizures very differently from the way that we treat atherosclerosis or high fat or high cholesterol, you know, just the same way it's treated differently in people. So unfortunately, other than supportive care like he's doing, making sure the bird is safe from falling and is eating well, there's really nothing to do at home. I mean, this bird really does need to see a veterinarian to have some tests done to try to figure out what the cause of that incident is and to try to prevent it in the future.
Now, if these people have been feeding their older cockatiel a diet of mostly seed or all seed, what should they do?
Well, we used to recommend feeding it an all-seed diet, and we didn't know any better. But now we know from the studies that have gone on over the past several years that seeds are very, very high in fat and very low in nutrition and really lack critical nutrients like vitamin A and calcium and a lot of very important things in a bird's diet. So they should really be feeding a pelleted diet. I actually did a lot of research when I was a resident 20 years ago, and we studied a lot of birds, and we found that the only birds that were meeting their nutritional needs were the birds that were on pellets at least 70% of their diet. So it's kind of like, I liken it to kids and cereal. You know, kids can eat junk food all day, but at least if they're eating something fortified once a day, like a fortified cereal, they're getting a lot of nutrients. So that's really
important.
See,
that's interesting. It seems counterintuitive. You know, like when I go to get processed food for my kids, I feel guilty, right? I'd rather feed them fruits and vegetables and not have to resort to vitamins or pellets. And then when I look at my hens, because I live on a farm, I have about 50 or 60 chickens, egg-laying chickens, one rooster. When I look at them, I know their eggs taste better. They have less bald spots. They seem healthier and happier the more I give them things like real fruit, you know, like apple season when we have extra apples, boxes of them, we throw them to the chickens and the eggs taste like fruit and the chickens seem happier. So really the commercial pellet kind of pre-made food is better than fresh, or
it's not that it's better than fresh. It's that you just can't balance a bird's diet with table food. I mean, a parent will eat just a couple pieces of this and a couple pieces of that, and it's sort of like us. You know, we're supposed to have how many servings of fruits and vegetables? And how
yeah,
many
like eight
dairy.
To ten or something every
you
single day.
You just can't do it, and so that ultimately you get nutrient deficient. It's not that you can't have those things, but what we recommend is that less than 1/3 of the diet be made up of fruits and vegetables and other table food. You really need to know that they're getting what they're supposed to be getting in that other 2/3 of the diet.
You know, sometimes I'm going to see a badly behaved dog or a cat that's giving its owners problems, and oftentimes those are the houses where when I walk by the bird cages, the birds have really plucked themselves bald. Mm-hmm. What's going on with that? Is it just stress in the house?
Unfortunately, feather picking, as we describe it, could be any number of things. And it can be anything from, as you said, boredom. I mean, out in the wild, birds have jobs. They have to find mates. They have to find nest sites and food. And a lot of times they're left in a cage and they're not stimulated and they get bored and they do pick their feathers. Sometimes they even pick their skin and mutilate themselves. So there's certainly a psychological part of that. But there are certain diseases, too, that they will pick themselves because they don't feel well, and it can be just an outward manifestation of not feeling well. So if your bird's doing that, it's really important that he or she be examined by a veterinarian and have some testing done to see if there's an underlying disease or whether it's a psychological thing.
You know, I have so many questions about birds, but I know we're running out of time. So just in case, I'm going to ask you to give out your contact information. So if people have bird questions and they want to reach you, what can they do?
They can reach me at my animal hospital. It's the Veterinary Center for Birds and Exotics, and our website is www.avian, so it's A, V as in Victor, I, A, N as in Nancy, exotics, with an S on the end, vet, like veterinarian.com, avianexoticsvet.com.
Well, I have so many questions for you, Dr. Hess. I know, is it possible for you to stay an extra segment?
Yes, I can. I'm going to switch phones because I have to give up this phone.
Okay, well, let's do that during the break. We're almost ready for a station break coming up in a few seconds.
Okay.
So if you want to do that right now, I can just close out.
I can run to another phone. Hang on one sec.
Okay, so I'm going to ask Dr. Hess a few questions about birds. Like I've noticed, it seems like oftentimes if I meet a bird that's aggressive, it seems to mistakenly think of the human as his mate. And gender, knowing, sometimes I meet birds and the people don't even know if it's a boy or a girl or what. So I wonder how hard is that and how relevant is that? And if you've got a bird that loves one person and is aggressive to everyone else, what do you do? So if any of that has been bugging you in your life, stay tuned. We're going to ask her. We're going to find out more about birds because they're really not like cats and dogs. It's a totally different mentality. We're going to go for a walk on the bird side, take a little flight today. So stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. It's Deb Wolf, and with me is Dr. Lori Hess.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you were referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 33955. Put your pet on the path to good health.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Tow Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Tow Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Tow Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Tow Leash, visit BikeTowLeash.com. That's BikeTowLeash.com. Bike tow leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeTowLeash.com.
Hello! You're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and we're back with me, Deb Wolf, your host. I'm calling all the way up here in Canada, Camp Good Dog, over in Maple Ridge near Vancouver, and up here, it is springtime. So we're going to ask Dr. Lori Hess a little bit about sexing birds and why they're so mean sometimes and what we can do to make their lives less stressful when they have to travel. But before we get to all that, I do want to talk about springtime and baby birds. I've seen the swallows. They just returned today for the first time. They did their big group circle over the farm and announced their arrival. 2 months ago, the hummingbirds came. But I think there are lots of birds like crows and, robins that are having nests and fledglings and babies. And at some point, it might look to people like they need your help. But do they need our help, Doctor?
No, they really don't, and unfortunately a lot of people are very well-intentioned, and they see little birds on the ground, and they go to pick them up, and a lot of times they're on the ground because they've been kicked out of the nest, and it's time to fly away, and certainly if you see a little baby bird sitting on the ground moving nowhere with no feathers, that's different, and if you see that, you really should take the bird and put it back in the nest. Don't take it into your house. It's really illegal to own wildlife, and that bird is not going to make it if you do that. If you really need help and it's not doing well, there are licensed rehabilitators out there that deal with birds. But you don't want to take it in. Those birds don't want to be your pet.
Well, it's tricky. I mean, I've had animals brought to me over the years because of the farm and the kennel, and there was a baby robin brought to me once. And I literally had to be with it 24/7 for a couple of weeks, and I had to find it bugs. It was not easy. You know, I had the rehabilitators on the phone whenever I needed their advice, but it wasn't what most people would be willing to do, I don't think.
No, it isn't. And really, that are rehabbers, they know what they're doing, and they really should take in the bird. And there are a lot of them, and you can get on the internet these days and find people in your area that specialize in all different kinds of species. So that's a better thing to do than to try it on your own.
Right. Okay. So for this guy who called in, we wish he could have gone preventatively, right? We wish he was up and taking his bird to the vet, and he didn't. And now he's trying to do some first aid, and we're trying to give him the best advice we can. But for next time, when he takes the bird somewhere, because I don't want him to just avoid all trips with the bird, all attention and grooming and medical care, because now he's scared of the carrier. What can he do?
Well, what he should do is he should take the carrier out, and he should make the carrier a pleasant place. It should be something that the bird associates with something pleasant. So he could put some treats that the bird only gets in that carrier and just start inside his house and just open the carrier door, put the treat in, and try to get the bird to go sit in there and just kind of hang out and have a good experience in the carrier. Then he can gradually progress to moving the carrier around the house, maybe just moving it out to the car, then maybe driving around the block with it and taking slightly longer drives till he eventually builds it up to the point of being able to make it all the way to the vet hospital. But it's something that happens slowly over time, and it has to be something that the bird learns to not be afraid of.
You know, it's amusing to me because that's exactly what I would have said for a dog, a cat, or
same
a horse.
Thing.
It's absolutely
yep.
the same,
those
right?
Are,
and maybe it's true for
yeah.
people, too. Maybe we need to get used to new things, too. Today
absolutely.
I had to take a nervous passenger in my car for the first time, and the car didn't smell like dog yet. It hasn't been used for dog runs yet. So first, I took the calmest dog I've got for a ride, so the car would smell like happy, cool, relaxed dog. You know, some things just work. I don't know if that would work with a bird. How in tune are they to smell?
They smell. It's not their main sight. I mean, it's the main sense. Sight is more of their main sense and hearing. But the whole idea, as you said, is it's about positive reinforcement, right? You are in an environment and you're willing to do something. Basically, you do things to either get something good or avoid something bad. And if sitting in a carrier brings you something really good and you learn that sitting in the carrier brings you something good, then you're going to be willing to sit in the carrier, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're not as stressed about it. So whether you're applying it to dogs, birds, or even people, I certainly will do this with my own children. If we want to modify behavior, it has to be about getting reward and getting reinforcement for it.
Yeah, I see that. But you know what? It seems birds really look different, right? It seems like such a different animal. But then there are crows who do things sort of mischief-like. Magpies do things mischief-like. They'll trick a dog to follow them and get hit by a car, or they'll steal things from you. And then you get this sense when you're around an eagle that there's a real intelligence, that they're as smart as us, maybe. You get the sense you're being watched. Do you find that there's all different levels of communication with different birds?
There are definitely. I mean, I get to work with really smart birds a lot of the times. I work with parrots mostly, and some of those birds, again, they have large vocabularies. They definitely recognize their owners. These are birds that live for, some of them, you know, 30, 40, 50 years. So I definitely see that they're very, very smart, and that's one of the attractions they have as pets, you know, to be able to have that kind of communication and relationship with a pet. It's a really an amazing experience.
Is there something you can recommend to us, the people who aren't bird people? Like, I can tell people when they're not dog people that they should get low, stay still, be calm, be happy, think happy thoughts. I can say things like that to them about how to greet a dog, how to greet a cat. Don't force it. Let the cat come to you. Right? Okay. How can we get on with birds? Because most of us put our hand out for the bird to jump onto us, and then at the last minute we think it's going to peck us, and we pull our hand away.
Right.
Okay, that's not the right thing, is it?
Right. And what does that teach? I mean, again, I liken it to getting on a raft. If a raft came up next to you and you stepped out to get on it and it got pulled away, what would you do the next time the raft came up? You would attack it or not get on the raft, right? So if you're going to work with a bird, you got to go slowly. Same thing for like dogs. You don't want to go too quick because they do get a little startled. You want to speak softly, and you don't want to make rapid movements like that. And if you are going to ask a bird to step out onto your hand, they have to understand what step up means, and a lot of them don't know what that means. But if you're going to teach them, you have to make it give them a reason to do it. So again, giving them a treat, just gradually having them reach out toward your hand to get the treat, not even making them step on your hand first, then gradually having them put one foot on your hand to get the treat, put weight on your hand to get the treat, and then put 2 feet on your hand. That's something that's going to happen over a period of weeks if you work with them. It teaches them, okay, there's a reason to get on that hand. And if you pull it away, there's no reason. It just makes them scared. So you just have to be patient and work with them.
I told the listeners I would ask you a little bit about sexing birds, and we're running out of time, but I do want to ask you. It seems so often when I meet an aggressive bird, I'm told, oh, well, she's just like that around so-and-so, you know, that the bird is somehow really attached to a human of the opposite sex. Is that common?
Well, birds, there are some species of birds, like African gray parrots, are notorious for picking one person in the house and really bonding to them. A lot of times, you know, they bond to the people that take care of them, and sometimes they feel threatened by other people that are with that person that they're bonded to. So it's not unusual for a bird to pick out a specific person. A lot of times, though, we attribute all these qualities, like they're mean or they're aggressive. A lot of times, they're really just afraid. I mean, birds don't come mean and aggressive. They react to the surroundings around them, to the environment and to the people around them. So even quote mean and aggressive birds can be worked with and taught to interact in a nicer way.
Nice. Well, thank you for joining us today. We've run out of time, Dr. Hess. It's a pleasure talking to you, and I hope people will look up the Vet Center for Birds and Exotics and find Dr. Lori Hess. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's been great. And don't touch those baby birds. All right, everybody, stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with Aubrey Fine. We're going to talk to him all about animals and the bond.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that
you know
I really do.
I really do. As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food.
Is your dog a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no can waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. Now through Labor Day, save 20% on Super Gravy and all Clear Conscience pet treats at Pet Food Warehouse in South Burlington and Shelburne.
I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food.
Attention all pet lovers. Do you love your furry pet? Well, I want to introduce to you Paws and Silk, the first all-natural silk-filled pet bedding and apparel line that helps improve your pet's overall health and wellness. Paws and Silk is made using luxurious long-stranded silk and all-natural breathable cotton. Each product will help keep your pet cool and comfortable all year long. Paws and Silk pet beds and coats will also work as a barrier against dust mites and other allergens. Not only are they fashionable, but they also don't take on your pet's odor. Better yet, they're even machine washable. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit Paws and Silk website at pawsandsilk.com to learn more about Paws and Silk and their incredible products. That's PAWSNSILK.com. You can buy directly from the site, and they even ship all over North America. How easy is that? For more information, go to pawsandsilk.com or call their toll-free number, 877-678-7455.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing Super Gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Smart Animal Talk on All Plus Pet Talk Radio with me, your host, Deb Wolf. And we just left the airspace. We left the birds behind. We're heading towards some furrier creatures because we're going to be talking with Aubrey Fine, and he's going to be discussing with me some of the aspects, the wonderful aspects of the human-animal bond. Welcome to the show, Aubrey.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, before we came on air, I discovered that you're originally from Montreal, so the Canadian takeover of All Paws Pet Talk continues. But right now you're based in L.A., and I can tell from what you've sent me, there's so much going on in your life with animals and people. So let us know what it's like to be creating all that joy and healing.
Sure. Well, it's funny that you sort of asked that question in that manner. It's ironic that as an adult, my life has been totally blessed to be surrounded by furry companions, and I have winged companions and lizards as well that work with me in my therapy world. But when I was a little boy growing up in Canada, I never had an animal, and who would think years later that I'd be sort of living the life of a Dr. Doolittle, except I don't talk to the animals, I talk through them, and they help me support children and families with that are in need.
The human-animal bond, it's something people make schmaltzy movies about and they talk about, and people who don't own pets often roll their eyes. Sometimes you'll hear people say that their pets are their furry children, and people with children roll their eyes at that one too. How do you define the human-animal bond?
You know, it's an interesting question, because all of the things that you said are all anecdotal comments that I think many people recognize. You know, Hollywood has grossed millions and millions of dollars selling films that show, as you used the word, schmaltz, warm, affectionate relationships. Books have been sold that have brought tears, laughter to our eyes. The reality, you know, many people look at the human-animal bond as this very significant relationship that's mutually accepted by both a companion animal and a human counterpart. In the new book that I just finished writing, called Our Faithful Companions, you know, I go through the evolution of the definition, because it's interesting. Although we think that this term has been around a long, long time, it wasn't until really the late 1970s at a conference in Glasgow, in Dundee, Scotland, that term first was used. And it was borrowed from, when you think of the attachment between a parent and an infant, it was borrowed because it tried to demonstrate that sentiment. But the thing that I wrote a bit more about was this whole logic of what makes that bond so significant is that familial love. There's a Greek word called storge, which actually suggests that. And you know, we could talk about it in warm-hearted terms, which I enjoy doing, but we also can talk about it in scientific terms, the things that we've now recognized since the early 1980s, that being around companion animals that we enjoy being with, our cardiovascular health changes, our blood pressure goes down, the stress.
And that's for people who aren't suffering from anything. When you talk
Absolutely.
About an ex-soldier or someone with PTSD or someone who's maybe gets anxious because they're worried about their diabetic child going into seizure in the middle of the night, or coma, you know, an epileptic child going into seizure, a diabetic child going into coma. Okay, now that mother can sleep because the dog is on duty and will let them know if there's a sugar level or epileptic issue. And so this kind of thing, I mean, yeah, now all these people like you and me who've been saying it all along can actually prove it. It's lovely to have science in our back pocket, isn't it?
Right. And so in some ways, you know, probably the most interesting part, which kind of related to what you were talking about with that tremendous warm-hearted thing, is that, you know, when we look at our favorite companion animal and look deep in their eyes and we feel like these sparkly feelings, well, you know, research now shows that, and I don't want to put it into a science context, but the oxytocin in our system, it's a neurotransmitter, it's that love hormone that we have, actually rises. And what's fascinating is when the connection is mutual, the dogs or cats or level also goes up. So in so many ways, being around our pets, our companion animals, is almost like going through a biological spa treatment. We gain those wonderful benefits, but in reality, it's much more than that, because I really want to put it to the grassroots levels. You know, what's it like when you come home and you're greeted by your animals? You feel that unconditional love. In my home, especially years ago when we had four dogs and a few more birds, the dogs would be running to the door like the Calgary Stampede. The birds would be screeching, "He's home." It's not like my wife's running to the door, you know, screaming the same thing too. It's that unconditional acceptance. And when you think about it, you know, you can make the comparison to like almost the TV show Cheers. You know, when Norm went to the bar, he wasn't really...
Everybody knows his name. That's
there,
right.
There you go. There you go. That's
you
right.
Know, though, I really don't think it's unconditional. I think when you come to the door and your dog drops everything because he's just so ecstatic to greet you back to the pack, it's not unconditional. If you abused him and mistreated him and neglected him, he wouldn't come to the door. He'd hide when he heard your car pull up. So it's conditional. It's two ways. You're doing the same thing. You're coming in with all your worries and everything, and the minute you see that dog, you're dropping all that and enjoying the moment.
Well, you're really hoping, and that's where the bond becomes more significant, when it is more mutual. You know, we are responsible for not only their well-being, but mutually need to be committed to that relationship, not only when they're puppies, but when they grow up and become adults, because it should be, as you noted, a lifelong kind of relationship.
You know, we only have a couple minutes left in this segment, but I know we're going into a second one, so I'm not too worried about running out of time. But when you said that, and I'm thinking of the two-way connection, I keep wondering how they get the dogs that are assigned to autistic kids to bond with those kids. You know, I mean, and they oftentimes hear when a dog can't quite make it through the Seeing Eye Dog program, he'll get retrained to help with an autistic kid. But a dog in a family where so many other people are giving and loving and expressive, how would that dog be able to pull and take and bond with the one person who maybe isn't? Have you had to work with that?
You know, I've written a couple of chapters in various books on the roles that animals have with children with autism, and you know, it's fascinating that, you know, I think of one young girl that I met many years ago that had significant autism, and she liked animals, but yet would become very, very agitated when she first saw them. And so with trained therapy dogs, we were able to gradually bring them into her world, and she fell in love with one of the dogs that I had, whose name was Magic. And through that relationship, we practiced communication. We practiced many of the social skills that perhaps she would have not gotten the opportunity to develop. But probably the closest.
Aubrey, we're going to have to keep talking about this when we come back after the break. So everybody stay tuned. We're going to talk more about therapy dogs and the human-animal bond with Aubrey Fine, and he's going to tell us about his book, too. So stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy,
I'm your doggy,
and I love you,
and I love you,
and you know that
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo healthy.
Has your life gone to the dogs? Are you at your wit's end? We can help. At America's Canine Academy, our specialists can put an end to the mutt mayhem and magically stop the destructive behaviors that your crazed canine has developed. We offer step-by-step guidance and make-sense techniques that will turn your problem dog into a calm, stable, and well-behaved companion. And we can even do it all by phone. Even from afar, we can assess a dog-gone-wrong situation and help you recapture your sanity. Call 877-WE-WHISPER, americascanineacademy.net, where dog whisperers are trained.
Our dogs are part of our family, an integral part of our lives, providing comfort, exercise, and companionship. All too often, however, this relationship is tested through dog naughtiness and general poor behavior. Our dog does not come when called, digs the garden, and many other issues that create frustration and a break in the relationship we seek. You love him, but you don't like him. Today's e-callers remote trainers have been developed to help you train your dog and overcome these issues that can result in separation from the family and worse. E-caller technology has been developed to help the everyday dog owner. Callers that set limit on the levels of stimulation and therefore limiting mistakes. If you seek a training aid that will assist you overcome the unwanted issues, e-collar technology products have developed dog training technology for the modern world that uses the lowest levels of distractive stimulus to improve behavior and reduce stress. www.ecollar.com. That's www.ecollar.com.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deb Wolf, and I'm talking with Aubrey Fine, and he just gave me a whole choice. It's like going to the all-you-can-eat salad bar and not knowing which salads to take. He just gave me a whole choice of questions I could ask and topics he can cover with different people who've had cancer and children that animals have helped that he's been connected with. But one thing that kind of stands out a little bit, so unusual, was you mentioned a little girl who never spoke. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Many years ago, one of my first therapy dogs that I had, her name was Puppy. And, after really making a tremendous connection with her, I decided to bring her into my clinical work. And one example was probably one of the most unique ways that I looked at animals acting as the social lubricant and almost enabling me to go under a child's radar of defense mechanisms so that we were able to connect. This little girl was entering kindergarten, and when she was a little younger, the family just considered her shy. She didn't talk outside her home. When people came to visit, she didn't speak much. And it worked out fine until she went to a place called school, because when she went to school, she wouldn't talk to the teacher. She wouldn't talk in class. So they got a referral from a pediatrician to come see me. And I never forgot that day, because Puppy used to be almost like my office manager. She would greet everybody and tremendously interact. And that little girl wasn't supposed to be there that first day. I was just going to talk to her mom and dad. And when we first met, Puppy greeted her and put her head in the girl's lap. And she smiled and embraced Puppy. And after a while, I was going to go talk to the parents. So I signed to Puppy. I actually trained some of my dogs in sign language. And so I signed for her to come back to me. And I saw in the little girl's eyes what I would call these eyes of amazement. And I just said to her, "Honey, all you have to say is, 'Puppy, come,' and she'll come to you." And the parents are looking at me and saying, "You know, doctor," they didn't say that, of course, but in their minds they're thinking, "This isn't going to happen." But on that one given moment, for the first time, they heard their daughter in a very low voice say, "Puppy, please come." And it was at that moment, the cold nose and the warm heart of a golden that etched me into the process. And then we sort of began our therapy, because in reality, I looked at the parents and said, "You know what, I'm already getting somewhere, so I'm not going to talk to you right now." And I said,
"That's great." Yeah. Because you know what? They're part of the package that isn't working. You just jumped ahead. Sometimes I'm sure you do need to hear from them, but sometimes maybe not.
No, in this case, because we've already got somewhere. But the point being, I've worked with many children that have selective mutism, that I've used other approaches. On that given day, we got it started. And, you know, over the course of time, although she would speak with me, I didn't have her speaking at school. And we eventually practiced to say, "Would she like Puppy to go visit her teacher in school?" So the same process was repeated. And for the first time, a teacher heard a little girl speak. So, you know, the important issue is not really the aha. I know many
right.
people really appreciate these aha moments. But in reality, we're talking about connections. We're talking about that in so many ways, the animals allow therapists to, as I mentioned, look much warm-hearted. It enhances our therapeutic alliance. But at the end of the day, this isn't easy for dogs. And I have to, since we're focusing more on therapy dogs, I know as a dog trainer, you would appreciate the fact that I spent also over a decade and a half looking at the animal welfare side of this. This isn't just simply taking a dog and
I think about that a lot, actually. I think about that when I see something on the news, like recently in Washington State, there was a sinkhole, and there were so many dogs involved in rescuing people and then finding cadavers. And the people reporting on the scene, the rescue workers were saying they were so much more effective when the dogs were around. You know, the dog would pinpoint the area and then they'd micro-search that area. But the toll it was having on the dogs, what hard, heavy, unrewarding work in so many ways.
And you have to be very conscious of this. So, you know, I've written articles on animal welfare. We talk about, you know, right now I'm involved in trying to develop a new complete strategy that looks at how do we evaluate the stressors that impact therapy dogs, including not only paper and pencil measures, but looking at levels of cortisol changes in them over time.
Oh, yes, because stress makes them.
Really
and that's really something key there, right? Because when you test those levels, you can tell if an animal is ill or under stress. When you stress out the animals you decide to eat, then you're eating that. You know, there's a real link here in that test, isn't there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, again, the concept of therapy animals, you know, has grown so far from when I began. I began this in 1973 before this was a field. And so my first discovery in using animals with people happened to be with a little gerbil. That was my first companion animal. And I brought her to a program with children that today we would have said had ADHD. And a little boy looked at me and said, "Can I hold her? And I promise you I won't move." And there was this little gerbil in his palms, you know, sniffing his palm and then wiggling on his tummy. And I saw the tremendous smile, but I saw tremendous self-control. And that was the beginning of a 35-year adventure, that some of which is covered. We have a chapter on animal-assisted therapy in the new book called Our Faithful Companions that just got released last week.
It's Our Faithful Companions, and it's Aubrey Fine. If you want to look them up, go to the website, aubreyhfine.com. Faithful Companions. And Aubrey, I hate to tell you this, we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to ask you so many more things. Like, I want to talk to you about what happens when you see a working dog that doesn't seem like it's well cared for. I've had that happen to me a couple of times, and I don't know what to do about it, you know? So would you come back and join me on a future show on Smart Animal Talk?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a great, great question, because in a simple statement, it needs to be beneficial to both ends of that leash. And I've seen dogs that should be doing this kind of work, and I really encourage people not to do it, because we need to preserve the integrity of the therapy animal or the service dogs. Otherwise, it's not a good fit for everybody.
Well, I hope you'll come join us again, and I hope you have a lot of success with your new book. I'm really hoping one day when we get told by a doctor that there's something wrong with us and we need to go for a test, the test will be to walk by a cancer-detecting Labrador retriever instead of to wait in line for some giant contraption and radioactive stuff to be injected in us. I'm hoping we'll get there. And people like you are making it possible in all kinds of ways. So thank you from all the people you've helped and the animals you've helped.
Thank you so much, and I hope you guys have a wonderful day.
All right, everybody. That wraps the show. We'll have Dr. Aubrey Fine back again, I hope, soon. And, it's springtime. Stay away from the baby birds. I know they're cute, but they really don't need you. Stay away from them. Okay, everybody. We'll be back in a week. Be good to your animals. From Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and me, Deb Wolf.